It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The origins of journalism as we know it date back centuries to the first newspapers. But television news coverage began in earnest barely over 50 years ago. The career of one Harold Hayes unfolded over a good chunk of that time, 36 years if you count the time he spent as a general assignment reporter at KDKA-TV2, beginning in August of 1979 and wrapping up just last Friday with his final sign-off. During his tenure, Mr. Hayes covered a wide range of stories, from Pope John Paul II's funeral to a Pittsburgh-area appearance by the Grand Dragon of the KKK. Next week, he'll be presented with the President's Award for Lifetime Achievement by the Press Club of Western Pennsylvania. Before accepting that honor, Harold Hayes joins us in studio for an exit interview. Harold Hayes, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. It's an honor to have you.
Glad to be here, and in a polo shirt rather than a suit and tie. This is the first May I've ever worn something casual in what's normally our rating period in the month of May. So I'm excited.
That's right. Well, how does it feel to not have to do that?
Well, this morning, my wife, who will still work for a couple of years, got up before I did, and I did have the presence of mind to make sure I jumped up and kissed her and not let myself just snore while she was leaving. I had a feeling that would not be the right thing to do.
Wait till tomorrow to do that.
Yeah. And I just went over to what was my mother's house in Belsouver and cut weeds, and that was actually refreshing.
And by the way, our listeners, and I'm sure among them are many fans of yours, Harold Hayes, you can join the conversation with a comment or a question for our guest, Harold Hayes, by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number, 412-246-2002. So I watched your send-off on the 6 p.m. news last Friday, and if you were broken up about leaving the business, I wasn't quite picking up on that. But what did it feel like to walk off that set for the final time?
I was trying very hard not to. I remember when Patrice King Brown's last day, she was in tears the whole day, and everything in me was saying, don't fall apart. Inside, I was torn because there are a lot of people I've worked with over the years that mean a lot to me that I may not see as frequently. We'll still get together once in a while. But there's so many challenges that you overcome in the daily breaking news thing. And some of it I'll miss, some of it I won't. I just tried very hard to focus on what was there at the time and not to get too sentimental. I am torn. It isn't as though I'm like, I'm free. Now, there's an element in me that is, but there's another part of me that I'm sure at times will miss the daily news grind. I'm not going to miss it at all in the summer because I'm going to do absolutely nothing. I'll find my life's work in the fall. But yeah, it was difficult just to hold it together, but I just didn't want to sit there and boo-hoo through the whole thing.
What will you miss? You say there are things about it that you'll miss. What will you miss about covering the news on a day-to-day basis as a general assignment reporter?
Well, I ended up a lot most recently in the court system, and there's a rush when you get a verdict at 5 minutes to six and rush down the steps to the truck outside and have your wits about you to tell them this just in, here's what happened. I will miss that rush. I will not miss these legs, which are 63 years old, as opposed to 26 years old when I first started. It was easier to rush down those steps at age 26 than it is at age 63. And I would notice some of the other younger reporters would kind of get to the truck quicker than I would. I wonder, how did that happen? Well, they're a lot younger. You know, the joke I have is, being there 36 years, I had socks older than a lot of the people who were in the business.
And what was that like as younger reporters came in with their own perceptions of how to cover the news? Because you broke in, and when you did, you know, there probably weren't even computers in the newsroom, right? There were just typewriters.
And yeah, I came in. There were typewriters with carbon copies attached, and you distributed those copies of, you know, the director got one, the anchor got the other, and the editor got another. the other thing that's changed the business so much is obviously the internet. When we had something a long time ago that was exclusive to us, you held on to it till the 6 o'clock news. And now there's great pressure to get on the internet the moment you know it, even if the other stations don't know it, which, of course, means that the other stations, we're on the opposite side of that. When the other station would have something that we didn't, we'd look and say, hey, so-and-so says such-and-such is going on, and that would change your assignment. So I look at it in terms of my daughters who are 30 and 25. They do not subscribe to a hard copy newspaper. They do not sit down at 6 o'clock and wait to see while they're having dinner, oh, what happened on the news today? They have it all on their phone. Whatever they're interested in is on their phone. And that's another generation's consumption of the news, and the news had to adjust to that.
What else has changed? You know, I noticed that in August of 79 is when you broke in, 1979. That's 2 years before CNN started.
Right.
So you had a chance to also be a part of covering the news before the 24-hour news cycle or the all-news television station, as it were. And that must have been very different.
It was different because in Pittsburgh, you really, for news early on when I came here in 79, you had three options, Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 11. And the ratings reflected that. Those stations took a big chunk of the share of the audience. And then gradually cable comes in. I mean, I covered city council when Warner Cable was the original cable company that brought cable to Pittsburgh. And I covered city council when they were debating that issue. Should Warner Cable be, you know, bring it in? So then all of a sudden, or over time, you have 70 channels. I still argue there's still nothing on, but you have more channels, you have more options. And so everybody started trying to fight and scratch for that portion of the audience that is still available. And that changed kind of the way we did things. I mean, it's very different that when you just have three options, you know, you can pretty much say, all right, this is what we're going to do. Time goes on and you're fighting for more, a smaller share with an audience that has more options, and that changes what the product looks like.
I think that Channel 2 was one of the last stations in this market to get away from the 16-millimeter film that they used to do stories on. Were they doing that when you broke in?
When I came, when I was in Peoria, we were still using film. And when I came to KDKA in 79, they had just done away with film and had just begun to put everything on videotape. But videotape changed about three or four times in the time I was there. Now it's all digital. But, we had just come to videotape when I got there in 79. But
so,
they had just changed over from film.
And so things, I would imagine, just started to speed up because all of a sudden you can put things on the air a lot faster.
Right.
You can go live a lot easier. And so how did that change things?
Well, in Peoria, when we were still dealing with film, you had to get your film in by three so that it could, what they call, go into the soup and be developed in time for the show. And most shows back then were at 6 o'clock. But there was, if you wanted it on the air, you had, no matter what had happened, you had to get it in the soup by then. Videotape afforded you the opportunity to record it right then, turn it right around immediately, and play it back. And then live TV was in its kind of in its infancy in the mid-70s, but by the time I came to KDKA, that's the first time I did a live report because everything in Peoria was taped, and that that changed the dynamic too, which will eventually lead us into this internet conversation. My daughter in Minnesota, by the way, told me, watch your tone when you talk about Twitter because she thinks that I look down on it. But
did you I mean, so many reporters are using Twitter.
Well, yeah, I used it. When you're up at the courthouse, you if there's a lengthy hearing and there's a verdict, you have to run out into the hallway for a Twitter break and say so-and-so was convicted and, you know, he's about to be sentenced or whatever. It's part of the trade. You have to do it. My bones about getting on first with all the technology we have now is please make sure you're getting it right.
Are TV stations covering the news today the way it should be covered, in your opinion?
Well, I'm an old dinosaur. I'm from a school that's closed and turned into a Unimart. I always
thought, that's right.
Well, actually, it's a residence for older people, and I may end up there, my wife said.
Come full circle.
When I got to KDK in 1979, the news director told us, do not use any more time or any less time than you need to tell the story. That's in an era when there are just three options on television. Now, and I remember doing stories in 1979 that may have been 2 or 3 minutes long, depending on the content of it. Not all stories, but some stories require that. And stations do that now if they have like a special report during the ratings. But increasingly, the time limit is about a minute and 15 seconds. If the Smithfield Street Bridge collapses, you get a minute and 15 seconds. Now, that would be a big enough story that there would be another reporter doing a story on how did they not know that it was going to collapse. That's another minute 15. And then the victims at the hospital, that's another minute 15. There may be 4 or 5 stories about it, but they would all be about a minute and 15 seconds. And that has to do with the attention span, according to the research, of the audience. There's a younger generation that isn't going to sit through 3 or 4 minutes of a lengthy report. They want to hear the basics of it, and that's why television responds the way it does.
We're talking with now former KDKA TV2 reporter Harold Hayes. He spent 36 years on Channel 2 and saw a lot of changes in the business, accomplished a lot in the business. So we're talking about his career, his observations, and whether, as things have changed, if they've changed for the better. You can chime in at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number, 412-246-2002. Harold Hayes, has television news become an if-it-bleeds-it-leads medium that focuses more than ever before on violent crime and disaster stories more than issues and matters of public interest? A lot of people have the impression that if it wasn't caught on a security camera, it won't make the 6 and 11 o'clock news. What do you think?
I kind of agree. One day I was standing, who knows where, listening to what all that was coming before me. And I was saying to the photographer, what would happen if nobody killed anybody today or no truck overturned on the parkway or anything like that? What would we do? Well, you would think that you would cover some substantive matters about government or whether private industry is meeting its obligation to the public interest. And probably would, but I understand why people feel as though all you're going to get is death and destruction, at least up until the first commercial. That is kind of what has happened over time. But the real sad part is people watch that. We used to have a segment Brenda Waters did called Good News in Your Neighborhood. And it lasted quite a while, but I think what happened in time, now I'm not privy to all the research, but I think what happened over time was people did want to see good news, but they didn't want to see it too early. They wanted to see the fire. They wanted to see what are all the police doing around that block, how many people were killed.
Gunman burst into the convenience store at the corner of
exactly.
And here it is on video.
And I'm not blaming the audience, but whatever you do see on television is researched quite a bit. And if they wonder, well, why are the stories shorter? Why do they focus on something that's a flash and a flare? It has a lot to do with what we talked about before, which is there aren't just three stations anymore. We're competing with a lot of other things. And that's all a reflection of it, I think.
You have traveled to Europe, and I mentioned covering the Pope's funeral. You went to the Middle East to cover a war. You've covered stories that are represent sort of a broader outlook on the world and how those stories impact us here in Pittsburgh, which many view as an important service and an integral part of the job of a local television news station, or at least that used to be the perception. Are the local TV newscasts still a place for enterprise reporting?
Oh, they are. All the stations have investigative reporters, and those reporters are able to take time beyond just running out the day of, because if you're doing day of news, you don't have time to really look into the why of whatever it is you covered, the why or the how. You just have time to talk about the what.
Mm-hmm.
But all stations do have investigative reporters that have the time to look into it. I don't know if their time is as lengthy as it used to be. Charlie Bosworth was the investigative reporter at KDK when I got there in 79, and there were times when he didn't get on the air for a couple of months because he was working on something. You could change news directors in that time, and somebody comes in and said he hadn't been on since when? And, you know, you could do the math about how long that would last, but as time has gone on, I'm sure they don't have the time that they wish they had, but they do have more time than the regular daily assignment reporter. I was pretty much general assignment, and it's pretty much this happened today, here's what happened, boom.
But if God forbid, this Pope died and there was a funeral being held over in Rome, would it be a natural inclination to send somebody from a local television station like KDKA-TV over to Europe? Or if all of a sudden the decision was made to put U.S. troops on the ground in Syria, and would somebody come to the conclusion that, yeah, we ought to be over there embedded or telling the stories of these soldiers?
I think the likelihood that someone would be sent over to go to a war zone is less and less for a number of reasons. One, the networks will have a feed, of course, for the network itself, but they'll also have people there who do nothing but feed local stations with their own version of the story. They tell the correspondent, all right, you're in Pittsburgh, and the anchor is Stacy Smith, and whoever's over there will say, yes, Stacy, blah, blah, blah. But I think if there were another event like the funeral of a pope, I believe all three stations would send somebody there. And that has to do with the Catholic population in the region. I don't know the exact number, but there's a significant audience here who are Catholic. And that is one of the reasons all three stations even then sent somebody there.
You had an interesting line about why you got sent.
Yeah, I was the only Baptist there, I think. But the news director at the time saw that, he knows what our audience is, and he wanted somebody there. I guess he chose me because I have a religious background. My father was a Baptist minister in McKeesport, and I guess he figured I had some religious decorum to me. I don't always show it, but I suppose so.
We're talking with Harold Hayes, the longtime reporter with KDKA-TV who retired last Friday and now has time to sit and talk with us. And we want you to have an opportunity to talk with him at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. More conversation with Harold Hayes, and we will get to your calls, tweets, and emails. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are sitting and talking with Longtime KDKA TV reporter Harold Hayes, who spent 36 years covering local news for one Pittsburgh television station, and has many stories to tell. We're talking to him about his career, his views on the state of television news, and taking your questions at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Let's start with Ann in Friendship, who has a question. Hi, Ann. Welcome. You're on with Harold Hayes.
Hi. Thank you. Congratulations on your career.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I wanted to know how you thought that local news could best use online resources to tell stories.
Well, I tell you what would happen on my day when toward the end, we wrote, of course, a television version of our story, but the KDK website also wanted a web version. And at first, we kind of said, oh, I'm going to write something else. But what we found was often what we did for television, fitting into a minute and 15 or a minute 20 seconds, was pretty basic. But what I found was that the web version could allow me to write the parts I didn't have time to get into in my regular story. So part of an interview that I did with somebody that I had to condense to 9 or 10 or 20 seconds, I could let the rest of the interview be part of the story on the web. So I found it kind of refreshing to be able to say more about the story on the web, not just writing the condensed version that I did on television, but allowing a little more perspective, a little more detail in the web version. So I think that's one of the things that I'm sure a number of reporters find, even though it's something else to do, it is an opportunity to leave a little more detail than before.
Ann, thank you so much for that question. Now let's go to a fellow by the name of David in Squirrel Hill. Hello, David. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much. Harold, this is your old buddy from Channel 11.
Oh, my God. That's, you know, the twinkle in his eye when he said David from Squirrel Hill. I braced myself, but I had no idea it would be you.
It's esteemed WPXI-TV anchor, David Johnson. David, thank you for, I'm glad you're listening, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate esteemed, though it's not well-deserved, but I'll take it anyway. And I just want to wish Harold a happy and well-deserved retirement. If anybody in this town should have a happy and well-deserved retirement, it is Harold. And let me just tell your listeners this real quickly.
Where's the mute button?
And anybody, photographers in the field who go out and cover stories, know that there's the one person you want to run into to exchange a funny tale and story with is Harold Hayes. He will make your day. He is not only an amazing journalist and reporter, and he's a very, very bright man, but he is probably the funniest guy you're going to run into covering a story. And I always appreciated that, Harold, and I'm going to miss that. I don't get out like I used to in the field and see you like I used to, but I loved it, and I love you as a person and as a fellow competitor, and I'll miss you on the air.
I appreciate that, sir. The feeling is mutual. Thank you very much. Here's something. A lot of people just saw my – I'm standing at the courthouse talking about, you know, 12 people were killed, and here's the verdict. So I'm usually pretty serious, but off camera I know how to cut up. David will appreciate this. So here's something to prove that I know how to cut up. I always told people that my wife had a better retirement plan for me than I did because she wanted me to work until I was 90 and push my little oxygen tent, my little oxygen tank up to the fire, covering the fire, and then a spark from the fire would hit the oxygen tank. I would go up in a blaze of glory, and she would get double indemnity. That's a better plan than the one I had, but it's that kind of stuff that he likes.
And David would be standing off to the side going, oh, the humanity.
Oh, the humanity. Mrs. Hayes, how do you feel? She said, pardon me. When I come back from the bank, I'll talk to you.
Oh,
okay, all right. Thank you guys for having me on.
David Johnson, thank you very much.
Thank you, buddy.
We appreciate it. Harold Hayes, you grew up in the Pittsburgh area. You graduated from South Hills High School and the University of Pittsburgh with a degree in speech and communications. I'm curious about the things that you were paying attention to as a young man growing up. How did they inspire you to become a broadcast journalist?
And I said this before, this isn't like just a KDK or CBS plug. We were a KDKA news family. We watched Bill Burns. Bill Burns gave the news when I was in come home from kindergarten for lunch.
You were watching the news as a five-year-old.
I was watching the news as a five-year-old, and then we would watch Walter Cronkite. And Walter Cronkite, to me, was the who was the CBS Evening News anchor. He was the standard for me of what a TV news journalist was. Now, there's a younger generation that would see his stuff and say it seems like too much of a staccato delivery or it's too stiff. But Walter, when Walter was telling you that the world was coming to an end, you believed that the world was coming to an end. So that helped shape what I thought television news should be. When I went to University of Pittsburgh, I had an internship at Channel 11. I hope David hears this. And that was in 1974. And at that time, internships, nowadays interns do a lot of things for a lot of reasons, but then all you could do was observe. But they were still on film then in 1974. And I'm watching this process and I'm watching him go out in the field and bring it back and write it and all. And I'm sitting there saying, this is the most exciting thing I've ever seen in my life. And there was an old director up there named Jack Blaireau who said, kid, don't get in this business. It'll chew you up and spit you out. Now, we had interns at KDKA, and there's, Mr. Hayes, what should I do? Go into law, kid. You know. But it is exciting, and it had been exciting. But the excitement at age 63 starts to wane. That's all.
You know, this is, I guess, maybe turning a little bit into This Is Your Life, but we have a Kristen from Minneapolis
please call the
phone.
Call the SWAT team. Don't let her.
Hi, Kristen. Welcome.
Hi. Oh, how are you guys doing? Hey, Dad.
This is
a wonderful interview. You're doing a really good job, and I think you should also just stay in Pittsburgh. Do more radio. Just stay in Pittsburgh.
This is
Harold's
daughter.
But I have a really good question for you. Knowing what you know now, if you can go back 40 years, would you still go into journalism?
I probably would because it was, as I said, so exciting at the time. I got to go places that I never thought I'd go. But then I got married, found the love of my life, and had two strong independent daughters, strong-willed independent daughters, like Kristen here, who should be doing her work in Minneapolis rather than
it's
calling
my lunch
daddy.
Break time. I'm good.
But at any rate, I wouldn't trade that for the world. At one point, I wanted to be a network correspondent and go around, you know, covering things all over the world. But when you have the daughters I had, it's better that I stayed and kept an eye on them and helped raise them. To make a long story short, since we're throwing names around here, when our younger daughter, we were taking her to a college visit, my older daughter, who's on the line now, apparently had a party that I didn't know was going to happen. And the only
sure
reason
they have enough time for the story. Like, I really think there are other things that the public needs to hear about your long journalism.
And the only reason I knew that is when we got back was the living room carpet was spotless. It was vacuumed and the coffee table was polished. And the wife and I said, something has happened here. And I'm going to reveal something. Bo Berman on WTAE was in her class and he was at that party. And I keep asking people about that party, and nobody seems to remember anything. I can't get a straight answer as to who was at the party, how long it lasted, or anything like
but
that.
But a good investigative reporter like yourself, you put the clues together.
Oh, yes.
You were busted, Kristen.
Now all of a sudden she has to go back to work, huh?
Good talking to you, Dad.
Good talking to you. Love you, dear.
Thank you for joining us, Kristen, from all the way from Minneapolis. Harold Hayes, is that your oldest?
Oldest daughter. Yeah. She was in Shenley High's class of 2004.
Before we get to the next caller here, your first professional job, you've mentioned Peoria, your first professional job in radio was a station in Pekin, Illinois.
Pekin, Illinois.
Just outside of Peoria. Something rather unsavory happened to you there. What can you tell us about it?
Well, there was not a lot of ethnic diversity in Pekin. I was probably the first or one of very few African Americans who lived and worked in Pekin. And at some point, somebody robbed the bank. And he may have been 6'8" and weighed 300 pounds, but I fit the main description. I was African American. And the cop, I was coming from the post office. And the officer said, did you just come from the bank? I said, no, I just came from the post office. He said, do you have any friends down here? I said, come to think of it, no, I don't. Would you get in the car, please? And he takes me to the teller. Is this him? I don't know. I'm like, here we go. I'm going to end up in Joliet. And I think the reason I'm sitting here now is because he had on army boots and I had on tennis shoes. But it was just a matter of there was not much ethnic diversity in Pekin, Illinois. And not long after that, I got a job at the TV station out there. But, yeah, that was something I'll never forget. October 1976.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like anything you'd forget anytime soon. You made it to KDKA-TV in the late 70s, and we weren't really seeing many African-American reporters on TV news until the decade of the 70s.
Right.
What was it like for you when you broke in? Was it different for you then than it would be if you were breaking in today?
I think it was different then. I mean, the first time I saw an African-American reporter on KDKA was when I was in high school. Dennis Hawley was on KDKA. Eventually, Jim Scott came to WTAE and eventually to WPXI. And then while I was in Peoria, I saw Ed Bradley on CBS, who was my color and had a beard. And I'm like, now that's something you don't see every day. But by the time I got into reporting here in 79, there were a number of African-American reporters. I think nowadays it's kind of like I don't want to morph into the Woodland Hills thing, but when I covered the merger that created the Woodland Hills School District,
right,
one of the kids we found from Rankin back in 1981 who was apprehensive about going into that district in 2000, his daughter was a senior at Woodland Hills, and I sat both of them down together and asked him, what was Woodland Hills like for you? He said, I was always apprehensive. You asked the daughter, what was it like for you? It's no big deal. I've been going to school with these kids all the time. There was an element of that that eventually I think reporters coming in today are not as apprehensive about certain racial things, but it's still there. It isn't. It hasn't gone away, but it's still there. But I think it's not as much of an issue as it was then.
There is an amazing Associated Press photo of you listening and holding a microphone up to Ku Klux Klan Grand Dragon, C. Edward Foster, at a news conference in 1997 when he appeared in Pitcairn. Did you want that assignment? And if so, why?
This sounds very strange. The assignment editor at the time, Steve Joyce, who was white, saw that he was having this news conference. And what was going on was the Klan wanted to march in downtown Pittsburgh, and they eventually did. They went to federal court, raised First Amendment issues, and were granted permission to do it. Whatever this news conference was had to do with that process. And the assignment editor said, we shouldn't give him the time of day. And I, of all people, said, well, I think we should do a story, even involving him, to show people that something has made the Klan feel more comfortable in 1997, asking to do something they haven't asked since 1920, which was to march in downtown Pittsburgh. I think that's the story. And they said, okay, and there I was. Now, what I do recall is he, you know, said whatever he would usually say no matter who was there. He used, I know, I'm sure, a number of racial epithets involving a number of different ethnic groups. And people said to me at the end of that, was that traumatic for you? I said, no, because he just said out loud what some people don't say out loud. He was just saying it out loud. Now, the look on my face was priceless. It was the look of a picture's worth a thousand words. But actually, Kristen saw that look when I got back and found out she had the party. So it's, you know, I've had that look before.
Well, someone who may know well what that look is apparently this is your other daughter, Lindsay.
Oh, my. Why aren't you all working?
From State College. Hi, Lindsay.
Hey Papa Bear.
Oh, my. I don't have the income I did, so you all should be working diligently.
It's the lunch hour. Everything is fine.
Okay. She's an academic advisor at Penn State.
From that viewpoint, as
academic advisor, I have a question for students who are studying journalism, for young journalists who are entering the field. What makes a great reporter different from a good reporter? What details do you see coming from your perspective, and what should they pay attention to going in the field to make that distinction?
Well, thank you for the well-thought-out question. For me, it is the difference between just getting on first but getting it right and taking a little time to look into the subject matter you're covering. In this generation, there's a great pressure to be first and kind of deal with the superficial issue. But I think what makes a very good reporter is one who might, even the day before they cover the story, if you know what it is, look it up, find out something about it, look for some perspective beyond just the superficial. That's the message I would give to them. And let me give you a little quick Lindsay story.
Thank you so much for answering the question.
Thank you, dear. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you for having me.
So she was a senior at Penn State during the original Jerry Sandusky trial, when everything was starting to break. It was, I'm sure, traumatic for her to watch the reputation of her school go downhill. But it was worse for her because beyond that, every 2 weeks, Daddy, because he was covering the trial and all the hearings, was on campus. And I know she was thinking, this can't get any worse. Daddy's up here. And I'd say, hey, let's go have coffee in the dining hall. She said, oh, I know a better place. And it was always like 10 miles down the road.
So, really?
I know you're shocked.
Well, we have Scott from Washington on the line who wants to get in.
I'm not related to Scott from Washington.
Yes,
thank
Scott,
God.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi, Harold.
How are you,
Scott?
Scott
Becker at the Pennsylvania Trolley Museum. And we met a few years ago.
Yes.
And you told me that one of your boyhood dreams was to become a streetcar operator. Now that you're retired, I wanted to invite you to come out and volunteer and relive those dreams.
Well, one of these days I will, sir. As soon as I get from under the to-do list that my wife will leave me, I will. just to let you know, the first thing I wanted to be growing up, and where I grew up in McKeesport and in Belsouver, I wasn't that far from the Shannon Library and the Shannon Drake streetcar line. And there was a point in my life when I said, I really want to drive a streetcar. So, yes, sir, I will come down there at some point and do that and ring that bell.
Scott, thank you for calling. We really appreciate it. You know, we had not originally planned, Harold, to go the entire hour. But if the weeds in Belsouver can wait, would you be able to stay with us till the top of the hour?
Yes, sir.
We have email questions. We'll take more calls, and I have some things that I need to put before you before we let you go. We're talking with legendary reporter Harold Hayes, who spent 36 years at KDKA-TV and just retired last Friday. We're giving him what we call an exit interview here on our show, as we do from time to time with important personalities, and we'll continue this conversation. You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with KDKA-TV2 reporter Harold Hayes, who just retired after 36 years on Friday. So we have to say former, but we're trying to put that off for as long as we can or do it as few times as possible. Gene in an email says, I always liked the evening magazine formats. They were interesting and informative. Can Harold comment on why they were replaced?
I am not privy to all the decision makers, the factors that the decision makers make their decisions. I will imagine that the ability to sell commercials for that or viewer interest or ratings or research made that decision. Now, one thing they're doing in that time slot, at least at KDKA, they're doing some things with David Highfield and Susan Copeland called Your Pittsburgh, which is kind of similar to that. And I think if the ratings hold up and if there's a viewer interest, you might see more and more of that. But I think it was a function of Group W ran that, and I don't know if CBS was as big on that or not, and I really don't know. But anything that changes has to do with ratings and the ability to sell the commercials and viewer interest as based on research.
Are you one of the folks that, you know, having worked in the business, having broken in the late 70s, are you one of those folks that feels that or laments the loss of so much locally originated programming on the network affiliate stations like KDKA, which, you know, used to do a morning talk shows and news shows. And I mean, they do them now, but, you know, there were a lot of local productions. Channel 11, Channel 4 had cartoon shows, right, and Chiller Theater. And
had
all
local
that,
kids shows.
Game, you know, shows, kids, right, shows, all that,
right,
kind of thing.
Right. It's all a function of the business that it is. I grew up watching Paul Shannon on Channel 4 and Captain Jim's Popeye Club on Channel 11. But the mid-afternoon or late-afternoon viewer is a lot different. The fact that Sesame Street is no longer on PBS and had to be picked up on HBO says volumes. They still have. I remember Patrice King Brown did what was the old Pittsburgh Today, which was in the afternoon, and KDKA has Pittsburgh Today live at 9 in the morning. They do make an effort to do a lot of local things. I just don't know ratings wise if kids show at that hour are going to do well, and that's the consideration they make. They obviously found that, at least at KDKA, from 4 to 7 p.m., there's a news block, the 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and 6 o'clock news in what Bill Burns used to call a town that has 18 minutes of news on a good day. But there is a news market, and, you know, 9/11 happens, and people gravitate to your TV, and something big happens. You have that capability of watching it all live. You're going to have it during the political season. God bless whoever's covering that.
There has been, as there is now, a degree of racial tension in this area. The results of disenfranchisement, or the feelings that people have of being disenfranchised, mm-hmm, police-community relations that are strained, and none of this has ever quite subsided.
Yeah, it's not new. It really isn't.
And you've covered quite a bit of it. From, mm-hmm, your vantage point as a reporter and what you have seen, how would you assess what's really going on in this city, and what's causing the problems we face?
I think we're getting a bit more fractionalized as a society. And I'm not going to get into a political discussion, but there are voices that are trying to segment our society, and there are voices trying to unify us. The younger generation that's had concerns about police-community relations, they are right to take a very close look at it. But I want them all to know that whatever your concerns are now are not new. I mean, a lot of the Klan interest in coming to Pittsburgh in 1997 had a lot to do with the racial tension that had to do with the Johnny Gamage case. That might not be the only reason they had an interest in coming to town, but that involved white officers in the South Hill suburbs and a black victim who happened to be related to a stealer. And it was, you could make an argument, had he not been related to the stealer, would it have got that kind of attention? I mean, those are all issues that were being kicked around in 1997. And I think it's incumbent on everybody to pay very close attention to their relationship with the police, and very incumbent on everybody in the community to be involved in helping the police when, you know, you have all these murders within the black community. It's difficult to get people to talk because they think they're going to be a target. They're not they're not convinced that witness protection is really going to protect them. There are two edges to that sword. So I think what I'd say to the younger community, the younger people who are paying very close attention, as they should, to police-community relations, just know it's not new, and all elements of our society should sit down at the table and be represented and talk about these things.
What was your reaction to Wendy Bell getting fired over her controversial Facebook posts?
My reaction was and is that there are so many people in Pittsburgh who are eager to speak on that. I'm going to let all them do that speaking. I will say that the internet and the pressure of stations to have the news personality share their innermost thoughts is a slippery slope, because then once they do, it can be problematic. I have pretty much maintained through most of my 36 years an adage that Don Corleone said in The Godfather to Sonny: never let anybody outside of the family know what you're thinking again. I have had the policy of making sure people didn't know what I thought, so that I could go in anywhere and get both sides and not have people believe that I have an agenda, whether it's right or wrong to believe you have an agenda. It's been my policy not to let people know what I thought. The old Scripps Howard saying was, give light and the people will find their own way. I subscribe to that. And I, all this about what you say on the internet, you know, it isn't just a private conversation. Everybody sees it. And I've been very careful not to let people really know what I think. And I think most journalists should follow that. But that's just my opinion.
David on Twitter says, please ask Harold about Kenny, a.k.a. Ken the cameraman, whom we all love and Harold mentioned last week.
Yes, Kenny Sims was my cameraman in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. And that's, you haven't lived until you've been to Saudi Arabia with Kenny. Kenny and I would go to in Saudi Arabia when they were building up for Desert Storm. It was called Desert Shield, the operation. We'd go to the mess hall, and he would wear a pirate hat. And invariably, we'd say, anybody around here from Pittsburgh? And there's somebody from Fayette County and somebody from Westmoreland County and somebody from Penn Hills. That's how we found all these, you know, they said, Harold found these local soldiers. Well, that's how we found him. Kenny just recently retired himself. And, yeah, he was a character. We called him the mayor, the other mayor of Pittsburgh.
We've got about a minute. Or less. Looking back on your career, what are you most proud of, Harold Hayes?
I'm proud of my the two young ladies that called here, Kristen and Lindsay Hayes, who should be working instead of spending time listening to their. They're just monitoring me to make sure.
They love their dad.
They do, but they want to make sure I'm not in Minnesota or in State College. That's what that's really all about. I'm proud that I have had my wife, Denise, of 32 years. It only, she says it only feels like 50. And I'm proud that of all the people who've told me this week that they've appreciated my work, I'm to them, I'm very grateful.
Harold Hayes has been our guest here on the program. He spent 36 years as a reporter at KDKA TV2, covering everything from Pope John Paul II's funeral to a Pittsburgh appearance, as we heard, by the Grand Dragon of the KKK. Next week, he'll be presented with the President's Award for Lifetime Achievement by the Press Club of Western Pennsylvania. And he stopped by here and spent the entire hour with us for an exit interview. Harold Hayes, an honor to have you. Congratulations on a great career, and we wish you the best of luck in retirement.
Thank you, sir.
You are welcome. And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Our look at whether the earthquakes in Newcastle were triggered by fracking, we'll get to that later in the week. We were not able to do so today. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.